Good morning. Orion Samuelson here with you on the Saturday Morning Show. We're always pleased to have you with us to wrap up the week in agriculture, and it's a challenging week in agriculture for a lot of folks down in Texas and in the Gulf area and now on the East Coast, and that means there'll be some agricultural challenges, certainly in Florida, but we'll talk more about that a little bit later. We're at 10 minutes after 5 o'clock, and we're going to be checking in with Dennis Smith at Archer Financials to talk about the impact of the hurricane on agricultural markets and pricing and movement of export products from the United States to other countries that have already purchased our grain and now will be probably delayed in getting delivery of some of the products. So we'll be talking about that. And, of course, we'll talk about the Sandwich Fair. Sandwich, Illinois, that continues through tomorrow night. We were there on Thursday. As always, a great fair. We'll talk more about that. But today we'll be taking off shortly on Air Orion, heading for Champaign and the University of Illinois, because it's the day that the University College of Agriculture, as I call it, the old-fashioned, it's College of Aces, but it's their salute to agriculture. And that comes with two or three events, including a salute to the alumni of the College of Aces, and it also comes ahead of the Illinois football game, and so there'll be a tailgate, and we'll be there for that. Hope you will, too. Then we look ahead to next week, and on Tuesday in Grand Island, Nebraska, the Husker Harvest Days show gets underway. That's staged by the same people who do the Farm Progress show, but the Husker Harvest Days focuses on irrigation and the technology involved in irrigation. So that gets underway on Tuesday. It's a three-day event. And Max Armstrong is hoping to be out there for that. So still a lot going on. And, of course, we've just gotten underway with some early harvest, and that's the big job ahead of the Midwest agriculture. So stay with us. We'll be, as I said earlier, talking to Matt. We'll be visiting with Jim Fazell. If you have lawn damage or are starting a new lawn, he'll have all of that information for you. And we'll check in with Jim when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Where did the summer go? It's gone. We are approaching fall, and that means there's work to be done in the yard, and the man who can tell us what to do, Jim Fazell. What are we talking about this morning, Jim?
Well, we're talking about getting back into the grind, getting back to business now that Labor Day is gone, and actually fall meteorologically is here, but you can sure tell when you go outdoors, and that's a perfect time to do stuff in the lawn, repair the lawn. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about, in fact, we promised that we'd be back to talk about repairing lawns, so we're going to do that this morning, and now is the prime time. Actually, we hope to have cooler weather, which we have right now, but we also hope it will be wetter. Not so right now, but we can always expect that there will be some, and if we need some moisture, we can always apply it. But this time of year, we have fewer weed problems. So if you do break up the soil or open up the canopy of your grass, weeds don't germinate right now. And it's a natural time for grass to germinate, so it's perfect. Several options for lawn repairs. If the lawn is thatchy and you need to go out and take a shovel and dig a patch of grass out to see whether underneath the green part of the grass you have a layer of stuff that looks like a fibrous doormat. If it's more than a quarter of an inch, you have a thatchy lawn and you need the core aerify to get through that, to remove as much thatch as possible. And we recommend that you make a hole every 2 inches through the thatch. A lot of these dethatching machines or coring machines that you can rent have tines 6x8. They need to be 2x2, 36 holes per square foot. That's the way to do it. Remember, you and I had a mutual friend that we finally convinced him to go out and do that, and he said, oh, I've made such a mess it looked like the elephants had run through. Well, that's the way it's going to look, but that's what you have to do. Now, if you only have a few bad spots out in the lawn, scratch up each spot. You can use a garden rake or a garden cultivator, or dig out the duff that's in there and fill it with soil from elsewhere in your yard to get it back up to the normal grade. Then you need to scatter seed in these spots and gently rake it in. I use the back of a grass rake. It's a wire rake. I turn it over upside down and just gently rake the seed in so it's about a quarter of an inch deep. If you need a general renewal, the lawn's thin but otherwise okay, mow it short. Then have it slit seeded. There are slit seeding machines that can be rented, or you can have a landscape contractor do it for you. Or if you can't do that, get a power rake, which you can rent at practically any rental place. Power rake the lawn, making grooves in it. Set the thing so it's low enough that it actually cuts down through the thatch and the grass and makes grooves in the soil. And then broadcast seed, just as you would a brand new lawn. If you did core, make sure that you get some of the broadcasted seed into the core holes. Now, if you need a complete renovation, that means the grassy weeds have invaded, quack grass and so forth, and the lawn is beyond repairing, get rid of these perennial weeds and the old grass with glyphosate. That's sold as Roundup and a bunch of other things, but glyphosate is the chemical. After you put this down, wait 5 days. Incidentally, when you're using this stuff, make sure you don't get it on anything green that you want to save, because it kills practically anything green except certain weeds, which, of course, weeds survive anything.
And anyway, everything.
Right. After 5 days, mow the lawn short, and then you can either seed or sod. If you're going to seed, slit seed in two directions. That's the way I like to do it. And the two directions need to be at 45 degrees so you don't end up with a checkerboard pattern. You need to have the seed at 45 degrees, and when that begins to germinate, your lines will be blended out so that you don't see these lines running across and up and down your lawn. Doesn't matter, actually, because this will actually grow in. One plant every 2 inches will grow in and fill your lawn. Now, if you cord, do broadcast after you slit seeded to get some seed into the core holes. We like to do that because that gives you an extra advantage in getting the seed to germinate. Or, again, power rake and broadcast the seed. Now, the seed mixture is pretty important. We like to use a blend of Kentucky bluegrasses, not just one variety, but a bunch of different ones if you can find that. We also like to add up to 50% turf-type perennial ryegrass. Now, Kentucky bluegrass is very slow to germinate. It's a wonderful grass. It takes forever to get it going. Kentucky bluegrass will ultimately make a beautiful lawn, but perennial ryegrass, the new ones that they've begun to develop, the hybridizers have got some that we call the turf types. You can't really tell them from Kentucky bluegrass without a trained eye. I can tell you what they are, but most people can look at the grass and say, well, that's bluegrass. Well, it may or may not be. And incidentally, a lot of our athletic fields, even some college fields and so forth, after a few years, because they do top dress with perennial ryegrass, turn out to be a mostly perennial ryegrass lawn. That's fine. That works very well. It's a grass that tolerates a lot of abuse. It will tolerate some diseases that do get Kentucky bluegrass. So it's a good seed to have in your mixture. Now, I noticed in some of the hardware stores, I've looked at the packages to see what the blends are. Most of them have a pretty good selection of blends for our lawns in our area of Kentucky bluegrass. So we don't need to worry about that. But we do need some blends of perennial ryegrass. And I noticed that most of them are up to 50% perennial ryegrass now, which is fine. It used to be that perennial ryegrass was a coarse thing and you didn't want to have it in your mixture, but you do now. If you have a shaded lawn, get a shade mix which contains as much as 25% creeping red fescue. That's important that you add that because that will grow in shade that some of these other grasses will not. Now, that's for seeding. Now, if you're going to sod your lawn, you need to strip off the old lawn and loosen the soil. Now, once you've done that, you have your soil loosened up, you can repair uneven spots, little spots that are low where the water has stood or that bumpy spot where the lawnmower hits it and scalps it once in a while. So that's your chance that you have to repair these. Once you've gotten it repaired, level out your lawn as best you can, rake it so that it is as level because it's never going to be any better than it is when you finish that. Apply a starter fertilizer, moisten the soil, then lay sod. Now, the sod needs to be fresh. You need to make sure that where you get it, they're cutting it within a day of when you put it down. Don't let it sit around when you get it on your site either. Only get as much as you can put down in one day, because if you let it sit out in the rolls on your pallet out in your yard and it gets hot, it will start to cook. And when it does that, it kills the grass. The sod needs to be grown on the same kind of soil as you have in your yard. Most of our yards are silty clay loam, so that's what the sod needs to be. If you're on a sandy spot, you can get sandy soil, sod grown on sandy soil, and you can also get peat sod if you have a peat lawn, but it needs to be the same as what you have in your yard. Once you get it down, roll it. That makes good sod-to-soil contact. If you don't roll it, it may be puffy and not really in contact with the soil. If it's not, it's not going to grow very well. Then for watering, if you've seeded, keep wet until the seed has germinated and is up and growing, or let nature do it. That's risky because we haven't had much rain in the last couple of weeks. Let's hope we get some. But you don't ever want to let it dry out once you begin to moisten it, because that will allow the seed to dry out, and it will stop germinating and probably kill the seed. If you put down sod, keep it wet for at least 2 weeks or until it's knitted. That means moistening it, not soaking it, but keeping it moist. And it's knitted when you can go out and take a tuft of it in your hand and try to pull it up, and it's stuck to the ground underneath it. Then next is mowing. You need to mow either the seeded or the sodded lawns when the grass gets up to about 3 inches tall, and keep it at 2.5 inches. Set your mower at 2.5 inches and keep it down at that height. Now, once the grass is growing, normal watering is all you need to do. Apply a measured 1 inch of grass of water when the grass wilts. There's no sense in applying water when the grass hasn't wilted, because it's got plenty of water. And you can tell when it's wilted when it has kind of a purple cast over the top. Fertilizer, you probably don't need fertilizer if you put down a starter fertilizer. If you have not fertilized this year, once the grass is up and growing, you can use fertilizer at the rate you normally do. And actually, you should have a pretty good lawn by the time we freeze up, and that may not be till middle of November. And certainly next spring, you're going to have a head start on things, and your lawn should be in excellent shape. By the time we get to Memorial Day, you probably know that it was never in bad shape.
I was going to say the lawns are just the opposite of corn and soybeans. You plant those in the spring, but you plant lawns or sod in the fall.
Sod can be put down almost any time, but seed, you really need to be putting it down in the fall because you don't have the competition from weeds. The temperatures are generally lower. Our bluegrasses are cool, and our perennial grasses are cool season grasses, whereas corn and soybeans are hot season plants, and they need to be planted where you can take advantage of the heat in order to get the seeds to develop and mature in the crops. But in the grass, you want to get the seed to germinate and grow and make a plant for you in the fall.
And when do you fertilize sod or your new planting?
As soon as it's up to mowing size, you can put down fertilizer. The sod can generally, when sod comes in, it's been pretty heavily fertilized by the people that are growing. So unless it's beginning to go off color, you probably don't need to do that. Now, if you have just started your grass seed and it's up to where it can be mowed, then you can put on regular fertilizer, lawn fertilizer, but make sure that you water it in well, because the fertilizer will burn if you don't have any moisture in it, and you don't want that to happen after you've gone to all the trouble to make a new lawn for yourself.
Jim, you are a wealth of knowledge when it comes to plants, and we always appreciate getting that knowledge here on the show. So how's your lawn doing?
You know, the cobbler's kids never have shoes. Our lawn in the front of the house, we keep pretty good care of that, but in the back, unfortunately, I was gone and didn't get around to putting some insecticide down for sod webworms when I should have. They've done quite a bit of damage in one spot, but normally they eat the leaves off, so those areas turn brown until the new grass grows. And of course, it's not growing very much right now because it's so dry.
Right.
But it will. We won't probably need to do any repair, but maybe in some spots we will. But generally, after a sod webworm attack, the grass will repair itself. Grass is a wonderful kind of plant. It does a lot of repair on its own.
Well, we'll let you get back to work on that. But as always, thank you for joining us, sir. Jim Fazell, specialist in ornamental horticulture and everything else, I think. But good to have him with us here on the Saturday Morning Show. Thank you for joining us on the Saturday Morning Show here on WGN Radio, something I've been pleased to be a part of for the last 57 years and plan to continue for quite a while. So anyway, thank you for being here and joining us. Again, this weekend, the Sandwich Fair, through Sunday at Sandwich, Illinois. Today, salute to Agriculture Day at College of Aces at the University of Illinois. College Connections program that gets underway at noon, and then the tailgate ahead of the football game this evening. So a lot going on. And as I mentioned earlier, we still have another outdoor farm show or two to go. And starting Tuesday, it's the Husker Harvest Days at Grand Island, Nebraska. Attended that show many times, and it's a great show, particularly if you're interested in using irrigation systems for your farm. So That and World Dairy Expo coming up the first week of October. We'll talk a little bit about that this morning. For those of you who like to make plans early for the biggest dairy show, at least on the continent, and a lot going on, as always, and the busy, busy work going on will be rolling the combines and getting the crop that's been growing now since April and May and even June, getting it harvested and off to the world. So we're at the 5:30 mark on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. And if you're an Amazon Echo user, all you need do is say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Thank you very much, Roger. We're at 25 minutes before 6 o'clock, and we're going to talk markets with Dennis Smith of Archer Financial Services here in a moment, and also some other events and another nomination for a top post in the Department of Agriculture, and we'll talk about that and maybe get a word or two in about World Dairy Expo coming up in a little less than a month in Madison, Wisconsin. But right now, we say welcome to Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. Hello again, I'm Orion Samuelson, this week answering the question, how do you like the Secretary of Agriculture? I'm delighted to be on the air for Wink Products Company because Wink Products Company is one of those Midwest success stories. Wink is a family-owned corporation in rural Eldora, Iowa, that has manufactured specialty cleaning products for more than 70 years now, going back to 1947. Today, Wink is a nationally recognized brand because Wink products work. Wink manufactures professional strength household cleaners and drain openers for you. You can learn about all of the Wink products at wink.com. That's WHINK.com. It's a question that I've been asked often since April, when Sonny Perdue was sworn in as Secretary of Agriculture. How do you like the new secretary is the question, and I haven't been able to answer it because of restrictions created by a medical situation and the inability to travel. So I never judge a person really until I meet them and see them face to face. Well, that happened at Farm Progress Show this week when I met Sonny Perdue for the first time, the Secretary of Agriculture. Traditionally, I've had the opportunity to meet and visit with the new secretary going back to the 1950s and 60s, but this year that didn't happen. So how do I like Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue? Well, a quick, simple answer, I like him as a human being. And I like him for a lot of the things he is doing. I like many of his policy ideas. But there are other things I like about the secretary. First of all, he knows agriculture. He has been in the agribusiness community for years before moving into the political world and becoming governor of Georgia. So he knows politics, he knows agriculture, and he knows what's happening with the market. You ask Sonny Perdue, Secretary of Agriculture, in the next hour, what's the price of corn, soybeans, and cotton, and he'll know, because he keeps up with that information. But I especially like for Sonny Perdue for what he does with young people. He has sort of established a strong relationship with 4-H, FFA, and when I asked him about that at the Farm Progress Show, he said, well, a simple answer why I do that, take a look at the average age of America's farmers and ranchers, and you know we are going to have to encourage bright young people to get into this agricultural business. So I like him for many reasons. I like his defense of trade agreements, which goes against what his boss says at times. But there, too, I think he's been able to accomplish some trade situations that are going to be handled. So, yes, the answer is I do like him as a person. And I guess maybe the best compliment I can pay him is this one, and it's strictly a compliment. Sonny Perdue is a good old down-home kind of a guy. He really is, and I like him for that. My thoughts on Samuelson Says, a presentation of Tribune Radio Networks, 20 minutes before 6 o'clock, and we're going to check in with Max Armstrong and Dennis Smith when we continue on the Saturday Morning Show.
Dennis Smith with Archer Financial Services joining us this weekend after a historic week. My goodness, two, not just one, but two packing plants coming online, am I right?
Yeah, that's correct. We've got two new players now in the cash hog market, and everything seems to be going smoothly as far as the startup operations. It'll be several weeks before they're up to speed. But everything looks good, sounds good, and even the hog market responded really in surprising fashion. Sharply higher trade on Tuesday, touching limit up in the Octobers. It couldn't have been a surprise to the futures market that these two new plants, but just the perception of increased competition seems to be underpinning the thoughts for the cash hog market moving forward.
One is in Coldwater, Michigan, and one in Sioux City, Iowa, as I recall.
That's correct, and they're large plants. They'll be processing upwards of 10,000 head per day once they get up to speed, and there's already talk of expanding to second shifts.
And other plants are being added. Places like Eagle Grove, Iowa, the new Prestige plant is going in there.
That's right, a new plant in Eagle Grove, Wright County, I think they refer to it. We've got a new plant already operational in Minnesota, a converted beef plant that is processing hogs now. So a lot of things happening as far as capacity expansion in the pork sector.
And some other plants, I think, were upgraded over the past year. Estherville, Iowa, I believe, was one. Wasn't there one in Ottumwa, Iowa, that was upgraded as well in the past year?
That's correct, Max. And we were guessing that total capacity by the time this is all done will be upwards of an increase by maybe as much as 10 to 11%.
Help me recall. Am I correct in my recollection that for years, the packing capacity did not expand in the United States? It just hit a plateau and stayed there.
That's correct. And profits at a packer level were always very tough, very slim, very narrow. That seems to have been changing. And the number one reason is outstanding demand for U.S. pork.
Pork demand has never been higher?
Never been better, both on the export front as well as the domestic front. And prices have a lot to do with that, competing prices versus beef. And it's just pork is in a real good position right now to continue to grab market share.
Now, the bellies had a rip-roaring market going earlier this year. That isn't quite the case now, is it?
Well, boy, they've come way off their July highs. I believe around July 24th was the high, and they've come down almost a dollar a pound. So we were well up above $2 a pound for a fresh belly, and now that's approaching just above a dollar a pound. So we've had a major correction, a major price adjustment. And, Max, I'm really expecting at some point point value to come back into these bellies, and that should provide stability to the pork carcass.
What about the rest of the hog? How are those cuts doing?
You know, hams are in real good shape right now, so we're already into the fall season where we'll soon be pricing hams for holidays. Exports. Mexico is our biggest buyer of U.S. hams. That business remains good. Hams are in good shape. Loins are a little bit soft right now, but pork butts are in good shape, and ribs are soon to embark upon their seasonal play. So overall, the pork cutout is in very good shape.
What is there to worry about then for the hog industry? It seems like the only possible move is up.
Well, what we are dependent upon is increased export activity. So we've got to keep the eye on the ball as far as exports and, of course, any major trade disruptions, whether it be through NAFTA revisions or a dispute with China, a dispute with South Korea. Things can get complicated in a hurry. So exports, we have to have the big export push, and any disruption there would be probably the most likely hazard or peril.
Regarding those worries, first of all, NAFTA. The big concern there would be if something would happen with our trade with Mexico.
Mexico and Canada, in fact. So both partners are very important. And, Mexico probably the most important trade as far as ham trade to Mexico, vitally important to the U.S. pork producer.
That is one of our biggest foreign pork markets, is it not?
Yes, without a doubt. Between Mexico and Japan, those are the lion's share of pork exports.
Now, that Asian situation, is it China you're worried about because of North Korea?
Well, it sounds like China could easily be upset versus actions that we may or may not take versus North Korea. Now, China is a buyer of U.S. pork. They're not a real big buyer of U.S. pork. And, of course, we hope in the future they will be a larger buyer. But major trade with China, of course, is important to the United States.
So given this whole situation, let us assume that nothing happens on the world scene to derail the pork export situation. Will prices continue to climb as production continues to climb?
Well, I think it's entirely possible. It's not realistic to expect both over the long term. Obviously, we need to see some sort of a plateau in the expansion of the U.S. hog herd. But for right now, we have a futures market at a sharp discount to cash. If we can provide some stability to the cash market through good demand for U.S. pork, you might see the futures market this fall and winter surprise many with some impressive strength.
Somewhere down the road, though, history tells us the industry is going to expand so much that we'll see a setback and maybe a significant setback in prices. Are you thinking that's going to happen maybe in 2018?
It's possible. We'll see exactly how the expansion unfolds.
Cheap corn looks like that's around for a while.
That's correct. So plentiful feed supplies. The cycles are almost always repeat themselves. We will not be bumping up against slaughter capacity for several years. So that's not an issue. But again, we could see a cycle where we take prices downward and then hopefully end the expansionary phase.
So profitability for the pork producers looks pretty good here for a while.
Yeah, it looks real good right now. And as you've indicated, cheap and plentiful feed supplies will help the bottom line and as we move forward.
Well, now let's change our gaze and look at that cattle situation. Not so pretty.
I can't be optimistic in the short term toward cattle prices. I expect lower prices into the fourth quarter. We should see some sort of a bottoming action in the fourth quarter. And then if you look at the futures market, they're pretty optimistic into the first and second quarter. And I can go with that optimism. So I think you see some sort of a V-bottom or spike low in cattle prices. It could be max lower than what most realize. But then the rebound, the recovery into the first quarter could be impressive.
What has gone on with the Texas situation, with the number of cattle affected by Hurricane Harvey? Has that been reflected in the market, or will it?
Well, I don't think it's really been reflected yet. It's mostly impacted the beef cow sector in the eastern part and southern part of the state.
I saw a number like 1.4 million head being used by the Texas Farm Bureau.
An awful large number of beef cows, for sure. We're not sure how many have been lost, and that number may be a tough number to pin down for several months. So moving forward, it could impact the calf crop, which would impact the feeder cattle market sooner than it would the live cattle market. We're not talking about feedlots. We're not talking about finished cattle. We are talking primarily about beef cows right now.
I have to ask about Florida, because it is not insignificant when it comes to the cattle industry. Could that, because of the other hurricane here this weekend, have an effect on the beef market?
Most certainly. And again, we're talking mostly beef cows, which is going to possibly impact the calf crop coming up. So, yeah, it could have an impact on your deferred feeder cattle contracts first, live cattle contracts second. Maybe this is kind of how we end the expansionary phase in the beef industry through a couple of terrible hazards and catastrophes such as two hurricanes.
That would be unprecedented, wouldn't it, Dennis?
It would be. And this is these storms, however, are really of a huge magnitude. So again, we're hoping for the best as far as the Florida Hurricane Irma currently posed to come in this coming weekend. Maybe it'll stay offshore. That's pretty optimistic, though. It looks like it will hit.
Again, in terms of the grain market, there really isn't too much for the producers to worry about there on the feed side. Those costs for the livestock industry, we have another report coming up in a few days, and I gather from everything we're hearing from people, there's not too much bullish for the grains expected there, and that would be friendly to the livestock.
Friendly to the livestock producer over the longer term. We will be using some option strategies for longer term plays, basically protecting against the next South American growing season and the U.S. growing season. But boy, for the near term, it's pretty hard to get bullish toward the grain market.
I always appreciate your insight. Thank you for sharing it with us again, Dennis.
Thank you, and you're welcome.
Dennis Smith with Archer Financial Services.
A good move this week in the administration as far as agriculture is concerned. Bill Northey, the Iowa Secretary of Agriculture, was nominated by President Trump to become USDA's Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation. And according to several farm organizations, Bill's proven leadership abilities and passion for agriculture make him a perfect fit for this new position. I've known Bill for many years, and he indeed is an active farmer and understands agriculture. And so I hope that nomination gets approved by the Senate, and look forward to work. He would be the second Iowan chosen by President Trump to serve in a very important position. Earlier, the governor of Iowa was named to be ambassador to China, and because of his personal relationship with the president of China. And so this would be number two, Bill Northey. John Deere continuing to do what the auto industry is doing, taking on companies that are working on the technology available to driverless tractors. Deere & Company signed a definitive agreement to acquire Blue River Technology, which is based in Sunnyvale, California, and is a leader in applying machine learning to agriculture. And according to John May, President of Agricultural Solutions and Chief Information Officer at Deere, we welcome the opportunity to work with a Blue River Technology team that's highly skilled and intensely dedicated to rapidly advancing the implementation of machine learning in agriculture. As a leader in precision agriculture, John Deere recognizes the importance of technology to our customers, and machine learning is an important capability for Deere's future. So it'll be interesting to watch that one. And as if we don't have enough challenges hitting us with weather and several other things, Kansas, the top U.S. wheat-producing state, could face some big yield losses next year from a virus that costed nearly 6% of production this year. That's according to a preliminary estimate, as low wheat prices may have deterred farmers from spending money on herbicides. This year's outbreak of wheat streak mosaic virus in Kansas was the worst since 2006, according to plant pathologists at Kansas State University. And wheat plantings, of course, this year fell to the lowest in a century, amplifying the impact of crop diseases like wheat streak mosaic that can cause localized shortfalls, forcing grain buyers to widen their search for supplies. And one final note from World Dairy Expo coming up next month in Madison, Wisconsin. The folks at World Dairy Expo are searching for the best young fitters and showmen in the world to compete in the World Dairy Youth Fitting and Youth Showmanship Contest. All young dairy enthusiasts are welcome as long as they fit the age requirements. And so if you want to go after the title of the world's best dairy cattle showman and fitters, get in touch with the World Dairy Expo in Madison, Wisconsin. And that's our time here on the Saturday Morning Show. We'll next be flying down to Champaign for the College Connections program at noon, and then also the tailgate ahead of the football game this afternoon at about 4:30. So we will look forward to seeing you there, and looks like good weather. I can't remember a stretch of good weather through farm show activities as this one, going back to the Illinois State Fair and the Farm Progress Show and the Half Century of Progress Show. Ideal weather. So have a good weekend and enjoy the last county fair in the Chicagoland area, Sandwich Fair, Sandwich, Illinois. Thanks to Bob Ferguson for doing the engineering work, and thanks to you for listening on the Saturday Morning Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.